Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. You know, despite a recent onslaught of terror attacks inside our nation, with each plot either backed or directly provoked by Iran, our president is still pushing to revive a nuclear deal with Tehran. President Biden seems eager to return to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which was put in place under President Obama. It placed some constraints on Iran's nuclear program, but it allowed it to keep its sensitive nuclear technology, including low-enriched uranium that could eventually be used to create nuclear weapons. Why are we helping Iran? Okay, joining me at the 50-caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, you've got your own podcast. What do you talk about?
Well, Colonel, it's called The Home Defense Show, and I talk about all things home, family, and personal defense. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that we talk about. We talk about defending our home against hunger, against crime, you know, spiritual protection, you know, guns, ammo, hunting, you name it. Just, you know, the family is under attack from all different directions. And, you know, homedefenseshow.com, that's what I talk about. Anything that will help protect the American family.
Which is why it's a really, really good resource for all American families. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss Russia perhaps going nuke against Ukraine. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then a Ukrainian Army officer and the wife of a Ukrainian soldier presently in combat against the Russians will discuss, yes, the war in Ukraine. Next, China expert Clyde Prestowitz will discuss the great threat China is to us. And Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really appreciate you, listeners. So we welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Well, now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. And we always start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, a Pfizer executive said this month that neither she nor other Pfizer officials knew whether its COVID-19 vaccine would stop transmission before entering the market last year. Member of the European Parliament, Rob Roos, asked during a session, was the Pfizer COVID vaccine tested on stopping the transmission of the virus before it entered the market? Did we know about stopping immunization before it entered the market? Pfizer's Janine Small, president of International Developed Markets, said in response, quote, no, you know, we had to really move at the speed of science to know what is taking place in the market. Millions of people worldwide felt forced to get vaccinated because of the myth that you do it for others, Roos said. Now, this turned out to be a cheap lie and should be exposed, he added. The Food and Drug Administration wrote in late 2020 that there was no data available to determine whether the vaccine would prevent transmission and for how long it would protect against transmission of the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19. Quote, at this time, data are not available to make a determination about how long the vaccine will provide protection, nor is there evidence that the vaccine prevents transmission of SARS-CoV-2 from person to person, the agency specifically noted. Meanwhile, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla, around the same time, said his firm was not certain if those who receive its mRNA vaccine will be able to transmit COVID-19 to other people.
Wow. So we, the American people, have been lied to. What a surprise. Our children's education was effectively shut down because of this lie, and our military is still throwing out top-notch troops who don't want the shot. And our military is thousands and thousands of recruits behind their goals. I wonder if anyone in government will admit their totally wrong actions. I doubt it.
Colonel, if this doesn't make people angry, what does it take? I mean, this is just beyond the pale, and someone head's got a role for this, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, there had to be blatant, knowing lies told to us by our government. Outrageous.
And China's communist leadership is attempting to interfere in our upcoming midterm elections by spreading propaganda and disinformation. The Chinese Communist Party is conducting influence campaigns with the apparent intent of increasing political polarization among Americans and damaging the reputations of people running for Congress who have been critical of the regime, according to a report by intelligence firm Recorded Future. Quote, China's state-sponsored influencers are almost certainly conducting malign influence operations targeting English and Chinese-speaking U.S. audiences with divisive political multimedia content on social media, the report said. China is likely to conduct malign interference efforts against congressional candidates and members who are outspoken opponents of the Chinese Communist Party and who support policies that will negatively affect China. The report comes less than a month after tech giant Meta Platforms announced that it had dismantled a China-based disinformation campaign ahead of the elections. That campaign intended to increase political polarization among American voters by amplifying extreme viewpoints on both sides of the political spectrum.
You know, we are at war with China, or at least they're at war with us. Okay, it's a non-shooting war, but they are a real enemy. We need to get them out of our education system and out of our industry and out of our country. We need to stop buying all things made in China. We're at war with them.
Hey, Colonel, my family and I, we've been trying to do that for a long time. But have you noticed it's really hard not to buy something from China? Because it's like almost everything's made in China these days.
And that's got to be hurting our economy because the companies in America who could be making it aren't. They're out of business. This is nonsense.
And service members who win medals at the Olympics or Paralympics would be allowed to wear them in uniform, and all who compete in the quadrennial athletic competitions could get a special service ribbon under a plan advanced in the Senate this week. An amendment that was attached to the Senate's version of the annual defense policy this week would require the military departments to update uniform and insignia policies to add references to Olympic and Paralympic medals where applicable. The amendment would also require the Defense Department to complete a report on the feasibility and cost of establishing a service ribbon to be awarded to any member of the armed forces who has competed as an Olympic or Paralympic athlete on Team USA.
This is total nonsense. If it passes, can I also wear my Boy Scout ribbons and medals, or a ribbon or a medal presented to me by some other organization? The purpose of our military is to kill people and break things. Let's only wear awards that show our preparation for those tasks.
John Dene Garza was in elementary school when the first cut of steel for the USS Gerald R. Ford was made in 2005. Now, 17 years later, she shares a milestone with the Navy's newest and most technologically advanced warship. Both are deploying for the first time. The Ford departed October 4th from Naval Station Norfolk, embarking on a two-month-long deployment to train with NATO allies. During the special deployment, which comes after nearly two decades of construction, the crew will hone the capabilities of the warship's 23 new technologies. One of those technologies is the Advanced Damage Control System, a unique system Garza has learned as part of her duties as a hull maintenance technician for the ship. She is one of 26 among a crew of approximately 4,000 sailors who work with this new technology. The Ford is the first new class of aircraft carrier designed in over four decades, ushering in a new generation of warships outfitted with never-before-seen technologies intended to boost the Navy's striking power for at least the next 50 years. The Navy invited reporters aboard the $13 billion carrier 2 days after it deployed to see some of the technology in action, which includes new aircraft launching technology, electromagnetic weapons elevators, and dual-band radar. "The warship is carrying the Navy into the 21st century," said Captain Paul Lanzalata. "I don't like buzzwords," he said, "so I'm not going to say game changer or transformational, but it's the now."
The Ford is certainly a cutting-edge ship. I'm beyond surprised that it's taken 17 years to get it ready for deployment, but apparently it's ready now. I wonder if and when we'll get some more high-tech now carriers. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. We'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll talk with a Ukrainian colonel and the wife of a deployed Ukrainian soldier. At ease, troops, take a break.
This is Lieutenant Colonel retired John Barry, managing partner of Barry Law. For over 50 years, Barry Law has defended the rights of Americans, both on the battlefield and in the courtroom. We are committed to supporting our fellow service members. If you need help appealing your VA disability decision, find us at PTSDlawyers.com or call 888-883-2483.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. Always keep your guns locked up and safe from unauthorized users, especially your children. Inside your home, you should be able to get to your gun within 5 seconds of sensing danger. To accomplish this, stage a secure and loaded firearm on each level of your home. Above all else, never leave loaded guns unattended where children can gain access. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. We eat it. Use the promo code FREEDOM to save 10%. Check patriotfoods.com. That's patriotfoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Russian leader Vladimir Putin has painted himself into a corner in Ukraine, and the chances of his using nuclear weapons to seize victory from the jaws of defeat are growing daily. Putin's threats grew louder recently when he said he was prepared to, quote, use all means available to us, end quote, including various weapons of destruction. And I'm not bluffing, he added. While some believe Putin is bluffing, despite his protestations to the contrary, one particular Russian capability should concern us all. That is Russia's possession of large numbers of tactical, low-yield, and micro-nuclear weapons. This is an area where Russia totally outclasses the U.S. and NATO forces, and these should be far more concerning than the strategic nukes in this Ukrainian war scenario, especially since the U.S. and NATO don't really have many tactical nukes left in their arsenal. We got rid of them a long time ago. The Russian tactical nuclear assets include air and sea-launched cruise missiles, surface-to-air missiles, medium-range, road-mobile, surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, and air-launched hypersonic land attack weapons. Avril Haines, the director of national intelligence, told Congress in February that Russia is expanding and modernizing its large, diverse, and modern set of non-strategic systems, which are capable of delivering nuclear or conventional warheads. Intelligence officials have been stepping up their warnings in recent months about Russia's growing reliance on tactical nuclear weapons in their military strategy. Due to Russia's employment of numerous dual-use conventional and nuclear delivery systems, about 24 Russian weapons can deliver both conventional explosives and low-yield nuclear warheads. Gaining advanced knowledge of any looming Russian attack would be really hard to do. If the Russians have it in their arsenal as a conventional weapon, it's pretty safe to say it has a nuclear warhead that goes with it, said an advisor to our U.S. Strategic Command. Almost every single weapon the Russians have is nuclear capable. If it's an artillery system, if it's air defense system, if it's a torpedo, if it's a cruise missile, it could have a nuclear weapon with it. And these systems can often launch micro nukes, which are much smaller than nuclear warheads, with tens to hundreds of tons of explosive versus thousands of tons of explosives. This makes them far more usable to Russian commanders. Since the start of Russia's attack, our officials have stressed that there are plans being developed to counter a range of moves by Moscow, but have kept specifics under wraps. While our administration says there are no signs the Kremlin has made move towards nuclear strikes and that Washington has not changed its own nuclear position, experts say our potential options could turn into a very real scenario given Russia's floundering campaign and an increasingly frustrated Putin. Our response to a major Russian attack would likely be twofold. One military and one diplomatic. If Ukraine kept fighting, we would continue our flow of aid, and we'd probably take the gloves off in terms of weapons provided to Kyiv. At the top of Ukraine's wish list is our Army's tactical missile system, a surface-to-surface missile that can travel 4 times further than anything Kyiv has right now in its fight against Russia. The embattled country has pressed us for this system for months, but Washington has been hesitant to provide it over fears that it could escalate the conflict. However, should Moscow use a tactical nuclear weapon on Ukrainian troops or civilians, or even detonate such a device away from a populated area, I expect the administration would finally allow Kyiv to have our tactical missile system or anything else they wanted so they could hit Russia hard. On the diplomatic side of things, meanwhile, Russian use of nuclear weapons could very well prompt countries such as India, China, and Turkey. Turkey's a NATO country, though an unreliable one, to put pressure on Putin economically. A nuclear strike could very likely put them under a lot of pressure to go along with the sanctions and take a tougher line towards Russia. So Russia would lose these lifelines that they've been clinging to and nurturing. Earlier this month, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said there would be catastrophic consequences should Moscow deploy nuclear weapons, and said more specific ultimatum has been delivered to Moscow privately. President Biden said that since the start of the war, the U.S. troops will not be sent to Ukraine, and experts warned that a nuclear response to a nuclear attack could quickly escalate into a nuclear war. And we certainly could respond by leading a NATO collective effort that would take out every Russian conventional force that we can see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine and Crimea and every ship in the Black Sea. Here's hoping that our European allies are thinking about this too. Their support for Ukraine is there, but way below what it should be. I'm of the opinion that we should tell our NATO allies that if Russia goes nuclear in any way, that's their problem. If Russia goes nuclear, they are the ones who will have to deal with the nuclear fallout. And if Russia wins this war with Ukraine, it's European nations that will probably be the next targets. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have today, Roland?
Well, the Air Force and Northrop Grumman have announced on December 2nd, they'll be rolling out the first B-21 Raider from the Air Force Plant 42 in Palmdale, California. The rollout is the first of a new Air Force bomber since 1988, when the B-2 Spirit emerged from this very same facility. The rollout is an invitation-only event and will include Air Force and political dignitaries and a limited number of media representatives. They're even going to allow photos, but the Air Force is restricted the size of the lens that a photographer can use, and viewing the aircraft will be limited to one section of the facility. The Northrop Grumman B-21 Raider is supposed to be the U.S. Air Force's next great long-range bomber. And if Air Force expectations pan out, 100 or more of the bombers will join the fleet in the next decade, providing the core of one-third of the nuclear triad and a lethal precision strike capability. The existing U.S. Air Force strategic fleet consists of an odd mishmash of three Cold War aircraft. The B-52 has served the U.S. Air Force since the 1950s, and under all projections, will continue to serve for the foreseeable future. The B-1B Lancer, developed in the 1970s, has given up its nuclear mission, but it continues to serve in a conventional capacity. In fact, Lancers were used hard during the wars on terror. And finally, the remaining 20 B-2 Spirit stealth bombers, well, they've been serving since the 1990s. And while they say variety is the spice of life, or the spice of any Air Force, the combination of three Cold War legacy platforms leaves much to be desired. The B-52 has been a magnificent airframe, but there are missions, including Deep Strike, that it simply cannot perform under modern conditions. And then the B-1B Lancer, it's growing older, and it's getting much more expensive to maintain. And then the B-52s, well, they're crazy expensive to keep in service, both because of their stealth characteristics, and also because of the tiny size of the fleet of only 20 aircraft, which drives up training, parts, and maintainer costs. In appearance, mission, and in many components, the B-21 draws heavily on the B-2. The Raider is smaller than the Spirit, but with a similar expected speed and about half of the weapon's payload. Initial plans for the B-21 allowed for unmanned mission profiles, although obviously that could never work or be suitable for nuclear missions. So how long will the new B-21 remain in service? Well, the B-2 is now over 30 years old. The B-1B is over 40. And the B-52 is a staggering 70 years old. Now, the Air Force certainly hopes the Raider will stick around for a good long time, but there's reasons for doubt. Stealth aircraft depend on technologies, and it's altogether possible that advances in sensors may make the low visibility characteristics of the Raider obsolete pretty quickly. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll meet two Ukrainians who are very involved in their war with Russia, and then we'll discuss China with China expert Clyde Prestowitz. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Start with 40, take a break, do another 30, then stand at ease. Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Send them through frontlinesoffreedom.com. The whole world knows of Russia's attack on Ukraine and the horrible way they're treating and conducting the war. Their military leadership has proven incompetent, but they have proven themselves to be cruel and heartless when they succeed, and their long suit seems to be war crimes. We're going to meet some surviving Ukrainian defenders who are bravely defending the famous Aristol plant, the last stand for the city at Mariupol, while fending off the Russian army from March to May. As you may know, this brought the Ukrainian armed forces precious time at the cost of this regiment's life. The defense of Mariupol is one of the most courageous events in modern Ukrainian history and maybe in the world, and the world has a right to know what happened. The person who found these fine people for me, Michelle, is a friend who runs World Heroes. Michelle, thanks for joining us today. Talk about World Heroes, please.
Thank you, Colonel Gillum. This is World Hero Foundation, and our mission is to help those that help others. And to that end, we are delighted to have the opportunity to talk about these stories of courage and the defenders in Ukraine, including the brave women who have supported their families and their husbands.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. The first person we will be talking to today, I've got to love him because he's a lieutenant colonel like I am, a retired lieutenant colonel like I am, George Kapowashevich. I probably ruined your last name, George. You'll have to forgive me and pronounce it right. George is a higher military education, majored in history, started his military career in 1994, trained in the United States, among other NATO countries. He's been in military operations in Georgia, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Kosovo. He's been decorated highly. In 2014, he joined the Azov Regiment as an instructor, and during the defense of Mariupol, he was wounded and evacuated. So, I guess I'm going to call you Colonel George, since I wouldn't want to ruin your last name again. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carl. It's an honor to be with you.
George, pronounce your last name for me. I'm embarrassed that I can't do it, but certainly I want our listeners to hear it properly pronounced.
George Kuparashvili. It's okay. We can go on the first names.
Okay. George, how did you get into the military? Why did you grow up in a military family? What caused you to join the military originally?
Yes, actually, that was a family tradition. So all my ancestors and especially father was a military. They got retired, so I just continued something inside, some spiritual. So made my career in military, and I hope my children also will be military.
And you ended up, you were in the Azov Regiment when the time came for the serious fighting that ended up in a lot of people being wounded and killed. Talk to us about the regiment, what its mission was, and what happened.
The regiment, actually, I was one of the co-founders of the regiment. I was a commanding officer. In 2014, I started as a co-founder and a head instructor. I had trained. There was a battalion at this time. So we created until it reached its aims at what became a regiment. It's one of the Special Forces Regiment of the National Guard of Ukraine. So until 2014, till 2022, the regiment was going through all the combat trainings, were participating in different operations. And it was one of the best units which Ukrainian National Guard had. So in 2022, when all this started, we were actually, it was a team located in Mariupol, the city which located in the south. And the regiment started to execute their plan which was developed during all the last eight years. We had the operation plan, and based on this operation plan, we just updated every year, and we understand the possible course of actions that the war was imminent. 2014 was just the first phase of a war. It's just not like a separatist. It's a first phase of war that said tactics Russia do and never change it, because such kind of tactics and strategies they used in Georgia, like in the beginning of 90s or 2008, when they occupied part of Georgia, 20%. So unit was getting ready.
So were you surprised at how the Russians behaved, or did they behave as you expected them to?
You see, Colonel, I was still expecting to, as an officer, they shouldn't, and we're a military, we're soldiers, and there is rules of engagement, there are Geneva Conventions. So there's written rules and unwritten rules, which you cannot cross, rules of honor, dignity. And unfortunately, I wasn't expecting that Russia's... I had a hope, but no, it did not work that way, because the Russians absolutely ruined all the... They never complied with the rules of engagements or with the civilians or the way they treat the POWs.
Okay, so... You were hoping for better, but it didn't happen.
Unfortunately, the hope is not a plan in a war. It's for the military.
Yes, sir. That's my experience, too. So talk to us about what happened. You were wounded and evacuated. Talk to us about that day. We've got a couple of minutes left.
Yes, my unit was, I was in charge of the North AOR. Our city was divided in three parts. My AOR, area operations, was in north, and I was deployed to the central part of city where we had a close combat with the Russian Marines. And during one of the fight, I got wounded, heavily wounded. I was transferred to the Azovstal steel factory. And in a bunker, I received the medical assistance with the surgery. And to remain a couple of days in the factory in the basement. And after it was, there was a special rescue operation conducted, which was an unimaginable operation, successfully, partially. And they evacuated me from the Mariupol to the safe area by helicopters. So it was 100 miles flying over the enemy territory, which was controlled by Russian ADA.
I know that you must know and have been in contact with people who in your unit or in your army who have been prisoners of the Russians. What's it like for them?
Colonel, I just can say only shortly, because Russians also is listening and they're making a moves as soon as a reaction on our interviews. So I would say is all the Geneva Conventions are failing. So Russians not complying with the Geneva Conventions. There is a torture, there is a hunger, and this is failure of the international civilized world. They wanted to put this pressure.
Okay. I take it you are proud of the way your troops behaved.
I am.
They were fighting for their nation, and they did a fantastic job despite overwhelming odds. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, I would say so. This is a new history, and this is a new Spartans.
I mean, there are good things and bad things and lucky things and dumb things that happen in combat all the time. But if you've got your men who are committed to what they're doing, things tend to work out a lot better than otherwise. Is that a fair statement?
I agree, sir.
George, thank you. Thank you for taking time for this conversation. I'd like you to come back in a few minutes and give us a wrap up. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. There's more to discuss about the defense of Mariupol, and we're going to talk to a lady whose husband was involved. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, some days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com, 10% off promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation about the Ukrainian defense of Mariupol. Everybody knows that the men and some women who fight in the army bear a lot of stress and strain and wounds, but their wives and families also serve. There's an old saying that they also serve who also are home and wait. And sometimes they're not at home, but they're waiting and hurting. Yulia Fedoscu, I probably messed that up, Yulia. I'll ask you to say that again later. She's a consistent consultant at a Ukrainian MP. She's the wife of a senior sergeant of the Azov Regiment. He's a historian by training, a participation in the Revolution of Dignity in 2013 and 14. He's been defending Ukraine with weapons in hand since 2014. He was wounded during the battle for Mariupol. His mother, brother, friends, and wife, and Yulia are waiting for Arseniy at home. Yulia, thank you for joining us today. God bless you.
Thank you for inviting. It's a pleasure to be here.
Will you pronounce your full name, your first and last name? Again, I'm embarrassed that I don't pronounce your name properly.
Yulia Fedosyuk.
Okay. Yulia, you grew up and ended up marrying somebody who either was or became a soldier. Did you grow up expecting to marry a soldier?
Actually, yes. I'm such kind of woman who loves a guy who are defending us, who are brave, standing, and who are ready to protect us with weapon in arms.
Okay. And how did you meet your husband? Is it just the normal way, boy meets girl, or was there a setup of some kind?
Actually, no, it was on the Instagram because it is hard to meet our boys offline because they are always on the front line.
Okay. Was he in the army when you met him or did he join? He was obviously planning to join if he wasn't.
He was because he's a soldier during all this last 8 years. And we met 6 years ago. We are married for 5 years. So actually, he was on the front line when we met on the Instagram.
So if you've been married 5 years, how many of those years was he gone defending your country?
Actually, during all 5 years.
Well, I know because 2 of the first 3 years, my wife and I were a couple. I was deployed to Vietnam. So therefore, I'm familiar with the being gone. And are you able to be with him at all when he's on duty?
Yes, sometimes. I visited Mariupol, actually. I know that city very well. And it was very painful to see how they are destroying them, Russians, I mean.
Okay. Talk to us about what your life is like now as the wife of a deployed soldier during a war with, let's just say, a nation that doesn't follow the standards that most civilized people do. You don't need to go into that, but what's your life like now?
I'm struggling for my husband during all these 7 months. During first 3 months of the siege of Mariupol, actually, I was fighting for them too, because I went to Pope and we were asking for the extraction. And now, during 4 months of captivity, I'm defending them. I try to do my best. We are here in the US to ask for help, for support, because we can see that Russians are not following Geneva Conventions. And you can see how released soldiers look like. And that is horrible. And I'm afraid that actually my husband is still in the arms of enemy, and I'm afraid of what they are doing with him. And that's why we are here, and I will do everything I can to rescue him, because actually he was defending me in Mariupol, and now it's my turn to help him.
Yes, ma'am. And it means a huge amount. I can tell you, as having been someone in that position, it means a huge amount to know that your loved ones are there for you and doing all they can and doing their best to understand your situation. That's incredibly important. Are there other wives of other soldiers that you know and are around and can support each other?
Yes, of course. Actually, we have an association. There are many hundreds of families there, and all of us are fighting together. We support each other, and we are waiting for our men.
That's delightful that you can all stand together, because you really, really do need each other. This is, yes, Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with some Ukrainians about defending their nation. Yulia, what I'd like you to do now is take a minute or two and sum up some key points that you would like our listeners across the United States to take away from our conversation. What key points would you like them to take away from what we've been able to share so far?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I want to thank all American people who are supporting Ukraine. Actually, we are winning in that bloody and unfair war because of you too. And we are asking for some unique help. We are asking to contact your local representatives and to ask them to put a pressure on Red Cross. They have to be there, and they have to improve the conditions of our posts. Also, we are asking to push actually the Russian Federation to exchange them all. That is our main points.
Okay. That's awesome. I thank you very, very much for joining us today. Thank you for loving your country enough to step up, loving your husband enough to stand with him and for him. I'm proud to call you a friend, and I'm delighted you could join us.
Thank you very much.
George, I'd like to get you back on now to give us a wrap up. Take a couple of minutes and tell us some key things that you'd like our listeners to take away from this entire conversation that we've had today.
Yes, I would totally support what Julia said. It's time to stand up right now. It's enough, all the dictatorship and imperialism. And it's, as a soldier, I would love, and a father, as a friend, as a son, I would like to, as Julia said, go to your representatives. Because when it is a world, civilized world, we need to pressure on Russia. We need to make a ICRC, Red Cross, more leverages so it could be able to be granted access to the POWs, because the dignity, life, and honor of POWs cannot be touched. And this is a law, it's international law. That's got to be compliant with every nation, with every country. And yes, I need,
keep going, George. I'm with you.
Yes. And exactly. That's actually, we're looking forward to raise this power from all the United States. First of all, I appreciate what the United States is doing for Ukraine. It's not only for Ukraine, it's for the entire world, actually, because this is Ukraine right now is a gate, which is defending the Europe. Because if the Ukraine fails, next going to be the NATO countries, and which is could involve us into the World War III, and that will be imminent. And this is a chance for us, for the entire world, to prevent this. You don't want to see your children in a 5, 10, 20 years going for a world war with Russia. And it's not going to be nice as right now. It's not nice, of course, but it's going to be nuclear. And we need to avoid this. And we need to prevent this. And that's every country, be its democracy and sovereign states. Not like you can occupy because you have a crazy idea saying you want their territory or you want to decide for them.
Well said. Thank you, George, for joining us today. Thank you for your service to your nation. Thank you for your concern for your troops. I'm proud that we're brother lieutenant colonels and that we're friends together now.
Pleasure all mine, sir.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Clyde Prestowitz about China. Then we'll discuss last weekend's Surface Academy football games. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. Friends, let's talk self-defense. It's not a secret that the face of America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if push came to shove. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even when you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal appeal, and retrial at a price everyone can afford. Check them out at uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES or text FRONTLINES to 281-603-0066. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.